Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Welcome to a special edition of 3CR Breakfast. Today is Tuesday, the 23rd of December, 2025, and for the next 4 weeks, as part of summer programming, we'll be sharing some of our favourite interviews with you. My name is Fung, and on today's program, I'll be highlighting some of the conversations we had with local activists and people from grassroots organisations who campaigned, protested, took part in direct action, and engaged with the broader community, all in the name of native forest protection. On today's program, we'll be hearing from Rosemary Story, one of Victorian Forest Alliance's founding committee members, as well as one of the founding members of King Lake Friends of the Forests, Mel, who is from Friends of Albert West Forest and Victorian Forest Alliance, Lisa Barand from the Gippsland Forest Guardians, Awa from King Lake Friends of the Forest, Juliet Lamont, who is a frontline activist for climate, forests and Palestine, as well as Nicola Silbert, a senior lawyer at Environmental Justice Australia. On Sunday the 23rd of March, grassroots organisations and concerned members of the community gathered outside Peter Khalil's office in Coburg to stand up for native forests and protest logging, planned burns and other forms of destruction. This rally, organised by the Bob Brown Foundation, took place in many other cities across so-called Australia, including Byron Bay on Bundjalung Country and in Nipaluna, Hobart. Today we're going to share with you a speech delivered by Rosemary Story, one of the Victorian Forest Alliance's founding committee members, as well as one of the founding members of King Lake Friends of the Forests. Afterwards, we'll hear from Mel, who is from Friends of Albert West Forest and Victorian Forest Alliance. And finally, to close this first segment, we'll hear from the Climate Choir, Melbourne.
Wow, look at all you wonderful people. This is amazing, so exciting. So, of course, I want to acknowledge the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people who stolen land we are all on right now. Sovereignty was never ceded. Treaty hasn't been signed. And I especially pay my respects to elders past and present and the elders who are here today. We're really grateful to have you with us. So I want to tell you a little story. I really just wish I had the photos to go with it. Every trip into the forest is an adventure where you could stumble on who knows what new delight. Recently for me, it was a wonderful spot, not far from here, just north. By day, it's green, ancient looking, full of birds. There are tree ferns, majestic old ancient grey gums full of hollows. But by night, okay, greater gliders calmly and silently stare down at you as they snack in the branches. Some, perhaps the younger ones, peer doubtfully out from dens. Their shyer but much rowdier cousins, the yellow-bellied gliders, shriek and gurgle across the hillside. Owls and other night birds call. Microbats zip about above your head. And last week, a platypus appeared briefly. This place is heaven. But you know there's going to be a catch, don't you? This enchanting spot and the surrounding area face a planned burn any week now. So first, Forest Fire Management Victoria under DECA will cut down any tree around the perimeter that they think might threaten their staff by collapsing or dropping a limb. Unfortunately, this often means the older habitat trees. Next, they'll use chemicals to start a fire. Drip torches around the edge and probably aerial napalm drops in the centre. Yeah. Any wildlife in the area that can't move quickly enough will likely die or suffer horrific injuries from either the flames or the smoke. This includes animals like the greater gliders and the other gliders who spend the day in tree hollows. The cruelty and the killing are monstrous. And the government can't even show any evidence that these hundreds of thousands of hectares of burns make anyone any safer. But there is plenty of current research to show the long-term effect makes the forest more flammable, putting human communities at greater risk, and worsens the biodiversity crisis. And this kind of burning doesn't appear to bear any resemblance at all to anything that First Nations people did. So what happens to all those trees they cut down? Well, according to DECA, they're given to the public as firewood because at the moment, in inverted commas and underlined, there's no legislation in place to allow them to be sold. Well, watch out for that potentially changing and the commercial demand for logs becoming the driver of so-called fire management. So even in Victoria, where supposedly we've stopped native forest logging, the government is still destroying forests and killing our beautiful wildlife. In addition to these burns, they're bulldozing thousands of kilometres of fire breaks, so-called strategic fire breaks, again, with zero evidence of their value, other than creating thousands of tonnes of logs, of course. They're also turning a blind eye to the rampant illegal logging of native forest on private land. So, okay, what can we do about that? Well, obviously, make sure you vote for a candidate or a party who will support forest protection. Thank you, Samantha Random. And I understand that many of you are not from this electorate, but, you know, just do a bit of study. The two major parties really need a good scare at this point. Contact or visit MPs and government ministers and let them know they're losing votes over this. Might help them change their mind. Keep attending protests outside their offices, outside Parliament, and in the forest. And make sure you visit the forest because it's nice. So talk to the Bob Brown Foundation, check the Victorian Forest Alliance website and join one of the many groups that are on it. There'll be one near you. Come and chat with any of the organisers here. Now, that was going to be close to the end, but I just have breaking news here. We have just heard that two very special areas of forest not far from here are due for incineration in the next 10 days. Yeah. So, we'd love you to contact the decision makers and tell them not to do this. We have flyers with the information that you need in order to do that, including the email addresses and the names. It's available at the... Thank you. Okay, so there's a few people in the crowd waving them, and what we're suggesting is that you use your phone to take a photo, because we don't have a lot of bits of paper, but just take a photo and then you'll have all the information you need. And there's also some on the Bob Brown Foundation stall over here. So, you know, together we are going to win this. We're going to save our forests, and you're all an essential part of that. So, yeah, let's get to work. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
This is Fung for 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and I'm here at the March for Native Forests. We're just leaving Peter Khalil's office now. We're marching down Sydney Road. I'm here with Mel, but I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So, Mel, can you tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, and why you're here today?
Hi, thank you. Yes, so we're from Friends of Alberton West, the Victorian Forest Alliance, and the Koala Alliance. We're here today, I guess, we do native animal rescue, and there came a point where we realised we couldn't continue saving wildlife with nowhere to send them. So we're here to hold the government accountable for the destruction, really.
We've heard a lot of speakers talk today about the election that's coming up. And so for listeners who are out there, what are some things that you want them to consider with this upcoming election?
Thank you. Brilliant question. So I guess the major parties are not listening. They're not listening to the 70% of people that don't want this destruction. They're not listening to the science. So think carefully about how you vote. Make sure you're voting for a candidate who does want protection for the for climate change and for forests. A hung parliament is not necessarily a bad thing, and I'll leave it at that.
And finally, if there are listeners out there today that really want to do something, they want to get involved, but they're not quite sure where to start or who to get in contact with, have you got any suggestions for them?
I would suggest your local forest groups. If you look on the VFA's website, we have a Victorian-wide state map where you can see who's active in your area. I would suggest talk to your local MPs. I would suggest doing some research about the science. The sciences are changing, and it's proving that what we're doing is just not working. That's about it.
And my final question for you today, Mel, is, I'm sure a lot of people know, but for those who aren't sure, what is so important about our native forests? Why do we need to protect them?
Brilliant. So the biodiversity crisis that we're currently experiencing with the forests will reflect on humans as well. The forests are our lungs. We need them where we're facing climate change. Biodiversity, once again, we're animals as well. So once those collapses start happening, they're going to happen within humanity and society too. So it's not just about aesthetics. It's not about a beautiful little forest. It's actually about the planet as a whole, and making sure that I guess that we've got a planet for our future. I've got my 11-year-old daughter with me, and that's another reason that I do these things as well. I want a planet for her.
For the planet needs us now. With elections round the corner, all Australians have a choice. We can take the path to come and go. Raise our voice. Vote for birds in climate action. For our Americans can rejoice. For the planet needs us now. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the planet needs us now.
That was Rosemary Story and Mel speaking at the March for Native Forests in Coburg. For more news and other information regarding the fight for native forests, you can go to www.bobbrown.org.au or victorianforestalliance.org.au.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast, and as part of summer programming, we're sharing with you our highlights from this year. Throughout the year, we were frequently joined by Lisa Barand, a founding member of the Gippsland Forest Guardians, a small team working with community to protect Gippsland's forests for future generations of animals, plants, and people. The following conversation is from our first interview on the 29th of April, when Lisa was on the show to talk about the campaign to protect the critically endangered slender tree fern and the destruction of native forests caused by increased pine plantations. In addition, a complaint by Gippsland Forest Guardians to the Forest Stewardship Council about concerns with HVP's protection of rare and threatened species led to significant non-conformances, and so Lisa talked through the background to this complaint.
It actually started with a little bit of a shock. My colleague Stu and I were walking in the forest, and we were actually with a member of one of the forestry organisations. And we wanted to show that person the slender tree ferns. And so we were walking through the forest and we thought, what we really want to ask is, when will the company start to do some assessments, some surveys of the slender tree ferns in the coop? And so we asked the question, and I was so shocked because the answer was, oh, we don't do these surveys prior to logging. We do them after we've logged to see what we need to protect and, you know, from what remains. And I looked at Stuart at that time, and I, for the rest of the day, I just thought, that just doesn't make sense to me. And there's big questions that need to be answered. And that was really the genesis of why we all came together.
That's really interesting. That says a lot. Even that small anecdote, I guess, shares a lot about how a lot of these big companies work when it comes to, you know, when we're thinking about the native forests and how precious they are. We trust that when there are companies working there, they are going to do their due diligence and do their work to minimize damage, or at least try to protect parts of it. So it's interesting to hear that they do a lot of the surveying after the actual work has been done.
Yeah, well, they do surveys. And of course, that was just one statement from one person. But yeah, that was the genesis for us. It was really thinking, wow, there's a lot to consider here. And let's get together, passionate people, and get involved.
Yeah, definitely. We're seeing, you know, lots of community groups around the state of Victoria and New South Wales really working hard to protect the native forests. And I was wondering if you could tell listeners more about the forests in the Gippsland area, more specifically for those who may not know much about it or who have never been, and what's so special about the slender tree fern.
Absolutely. So the Gippsland Forest is a very large area. If you think about where the prom is, let's say you're on Google Earth, you go north from there, you're going to see this really large green area from a satellite view, and that's the Gippsland Forest. What's common about them is that they're low elevation, very heavily densely forested hills with very steep and gorgeous gullies in them. When you look at that satellite view, it's not all forest. A lot of it's plantation. We need plantations. Plantation is a absolutely legitimate and legal activity. But there are pockets of native forest in there. Our team is pretty much located in the southwest area. And so I can tell you a lot about that area. Everything's damp and wet all the time. Gippsland forests get a lot of rain and it's beautiful. So the trees are glistening. It's gorgeous in the morning. If you're up on the hill, at the top of these hills, they're covered with amazing, enormous mountain ash trees, 50, 60, 70 metres tall, beautiful messmates around them. This is all the habitat that the Strzelecki koalas love, the gangangs, the cockatoos, the lyrebirds. If you go off the side of these hills and down into the gullies, other people might be able to do it more quickly than me, but it's probably a 20 minute walk and scramble down the hill and maybe an hour back up because it's really, really steep. But as you go down, you start to see the vegetation change. It's not like a line. It changes slowly. There's beautiful other trees like blackwoods. You start to get into the fern areas and then it becomes quiet and still. The temperature kind of drops as you enter into this kind of cool, temperate rainforest area. Lots of ferns, the kind of decomposing matter underneath you, underneath your feet. It's an amazing experience. Everywhere you look, it's green. Not one shade of green, hundreds of shades of green. And this is where you find the slender tree fern, on the sides of these very steep gullies and down in the bottom of the gullies as well, where there's lots of other species too. But it's so still because the wind doesn't get down there. So you asked about the slender tree fern, and thank you just to say at the very outset for being so interested in this very rare species. So imagine a tree fern that's so tall. It's 20 metres tall, but it's only as thick as your arm. So it's so fragile. People use the word vulnerable. Of course, it's a vulnerable species because it's rare. It's actually critically endangered. And for that reason, obviously, needs lots of protection. But you can see when you're right next to one just how vulnerable it is. You can touch it and it wobbles. So it absolutely relies on all the species around it to protect it. So these slender tree ferns are in these native forest gullies. They're also in the native forest gullies that are in the coop that you were mentioning earlier too. So this is the slender tree fern.
Mm. I love your descriptions, Lisa. I feel like you've painted such a beautiful picture for us all, and I'm sure listeners tuning in will try to find some time soon to get down to Gippsland to see for themselves. So I wanted to talk about more about the work that the Gippsland Forest Guardians are actually doing to protect the slender tree fern and more generally the native forests. Mm. Can you talk about some of the threats to the slender tree fern and just the health and longevity of native forests in the area?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny you say about the descriptions. We actually had a Melbourne University group down on the weekend, and one of the students, when we were down in the gully, she said, oh, you know the movie Avatar? And I thought, yes, that's it. It totally evokes this sense of just huge biodiversity, species everywhere. It's really quite magical. And it's partly that in the cool temperate rainforest that makes it so vulnerable. You know, one of your lead-in ads was about, you know, cool burns, etc. One thing about cool temperate rainforest species is they absolutely just do not survive fires. So when you talk about threats, fire is a massive threat. Exposure to wind, obviously, forestry operations happening nearby, a major risk as well. They're critically endangered because there aren't very many left. You know, a survey, I think it was 2013, there were fewer than 1,000 left in the whole country. There's only one individual tree or tree fern in New South Wales, so they're super, super rare. And in addition to fires, things like pest animals, like deer, they call them grazing or browsing, but rubbing up against them because they're so tall and so vulnerable, easily knocked over.
It's, yeah, interesting when what you just said before about a student describing it as a scene from Avatar, because, you know, that's a complete, you know, it's a make-believe movie, and it's amazing that people relate to or find so much beauty in these imagined worlds. But it's interesting to know that, like, those do exist.
Yes,
right in front of us, and they need protection. Yeah, it's not like something that doesn't exist and we need to imagine it. They're right in front of us.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, it is reality. And, you know, we look at that movie as though it's fiction, but it's based on the reality of the amazing natural world that we're surrounded by. One of the other challenges for slender tree ferns is how long it takes for them to actually become fertile and able to reproduce. You know, it's 20, 25 years. So if you lose a very small pocket of them and they haven't reached that age, then, you know, it's all over for those. Some of the research we've been involved in, I mean, when you ask about what kinds of activities we're doing to protect them, being part of research to actually map the slender tree ferns, so, and make sure that they're provided with proper buffer protection around them, and that's the work that we've been doing in particular in the forestry area.
Time is quickly escaping from us, Lisa. So, but I did want to touch on a story before you go, and listeners tuning in last week would know that we talked about the audit, findings from the audit that was conducted. So I was wondering if you could tell us more about that, some of the findings, and the work that you're doing in relation to this.
Absolutely. So when we talk about the audit, It's like a sustainability audit. So some of your listeners might be looking to get their first coffee for the day and maybe choosing a fair trade coffee. Mm. So fair trade is a reputation-based kind of brand. You trust it because you hope when you pay a little bit extra for that coffee, it's going to come from a company that's actually making sure things are done right. Well, the FSC, the Forest Stewardship Council, is exactly like that, but it's for forestry. It's great. You know, the documentation they provide, the principles they adhere to, you know, if I summarize it, it's like do no more harm to forests. So after a year of trying to work with the forestry company around protection for slender tree ferns, there's great science on it. We provided that to the company last year. The recommended, especially for a population that's significant, like in the logging coop, there's 70, but we've found over 400 in the area. So this is now the largest population of slender tree ferns in the country. The ecologist that did that work identified it as a regionally or even nationally significant population. So we tried to get proper protections in place. That didn't work. So we put in a complaint to the FSC auditor, and as a result of that complaint, the findings were released in the audit, and they're significant. There's three significant findings, two relating to the protection for the slender tree ferns, where unfortunately for the slender tree ferns, it seems like the auditor was not able to establish exactly what protections the company HVP had put in place, or whether those protections were adequate for the slender tree fern. The best available science is actually a 200-metre special management zone. They need 200 metres of protection around them, all that native forest. You imagine you're down in the bottom of that gully and you're a slender tree fern. You look up. Everything that's above you absolutely matters. Mm. So 200 metres, best available information, and that's what they found. So that you know, we're very concerned that that is still the case, and those high conservation areas and the slender tree ferns really need that 200 metres. And the other complaint, if you like, that we made was that HVP's planned intention is to plant pines, and that seemed to be completely inconsistent with one of the principles of the FSC, and so we asked them to look into that, and it seems like they also agree with us. That matter is being appealed by the company, but it kind of shows you how seriously the FSC is considering it, because they have put in place what's called the precautionary principle, which means that nothing, you know, in effect, nothing can happen on that site until the matter's heard. Mm. But we're going to be really strongly at the table advocating for what we see the wording of the FSC means, and to ensure that the protections are put in place in the best possible way.
That was Lisa Barrand from Gippsland Forest Guardians. You can follow their work by heading to gippslandforestguardians.org.au or follow them on Instagram at Gippsland Forest Guardians Inc. We will be sharing another conversation with Lisa later in the program. Emily Waramara is a Wanandilyagwa woman and award-winning singer-songwriter. This song hails from a 2018 album, Milyakbara, and it's called Black Smoke.
I'll be sleeping under stars tonight, not sure exactly where I'll be. Maybe underneath the pale moonlight, or maybe underneath that tree. Black smoke, riding in the sky tonight. Everything will be alright if you let go. Humans will gather in a place tonight. Everything will be alright if you let go. Ooh. Ooh.
be sleeping on the stars tonight. Not sure exactly where I'll be. Maybe underneath the pale moonlight, or maybe underneath that tree. Black smoke riding in the sky tonight. Everything will be alright if you let go. Humans will gather in a place tonight. Everything will be alright if you let go.
Telling the Albanese government how to protect nature might feel a bit like teaching them to suck eggs. But too often, governments side with big corporations over your health, your climate, and your children's future. As they rewrite Australia's nature law, they must close deforestation loopholes and protect threatened species. It's literally their job. Head to wilderness.org.au/suckeggs to demand laws that put nature and our future first. The Wilderness Society is a 3CR supporter.
Friends of the Earth Food Co-op is open. Get fresh produce and support local farmers and keep our grassroots community thriving through these unusual times. Organic veggie boxes and click and collect now available. Visit www.foefood.org/click-collect to place your orders. Or pop in store at 312 Smith Street and see how we're adapting with our new physical distancing layout. Shop organic and buy local. Made easy at Friends of the Earth. A proud 3CR supporter.
Boom bap jazz. The Milky Way looks good in the night sky. So stars open a shot for my dark eyes.
Complex. Hey, I'm Lady Lash. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, the voice of dissent. 3CR is so awesome, giving the platform for people's voices to be heard and people's gifts to be heard. And always remember that you are amazing.
I'm dreaming of the seven moons. Oh, I see what's new.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital, and at 3cr.org.au. On the 20th of May, we spoke to Awa from Kinglake Friends of the Forests. Kinglake Friends of the Forests is a volunteer community group committed to protecting native forests and relishing the joy of their unique biodiversity. The group started in opposition to local logging operations in Kinglake in 2018. Before long, they were running court cases against logging agency Vic Forests that ended up halting native forest logging across the entire state from November 2022, over a year before the official end of the industry in 2024. Since the end of Vic Forests, Kinglake Friends of the Forest have turned their attention to the industrial burning of forests that occurs under the guise of bushfire management. In the following conversation, Awa and I spoke about the campaign to save over 600 hectares of forest in Toolangi from a planned burn and the threats to the survival of forests caused by Forest Fire Management Victoria. On the 2nd of June, Kinglake Friends of the Forest released a statement sharing the news that the Glenburn Eagle's Nest planned burn would not proceed this year. However, Forest Fire Management Victoria have not yet removed this burn from their planning. So I just wanted to take our listeners back to Monday, May 19th. Can you explain what was happening in the Toolangi State Forest, what you were out there doing, what you were seeing, things like that?
Yeah, sure. So last week we were out in Toolangi in this really special patch of forest that we've got to know over about a year. And it was a bit of a strange day because usually we're out there with GPSs and torches, but last week we were there with a water tank and a pump and a hose. And that's because any day now, it could have been last week, it could be this week, Forest Fire Management is planning on burning this forest. And it's just chock full of threatened species. So that's greater gliders, that's yellow-bellied gliders, powerful owls, sooty owls, platypus, and critically endangered barred galaxias, these beautiful little very local fish. So we were there because there's so many greater gliders who have actually managed to find some of their den trees, which it's quite hard to find because you have to happen on them when they're coming out of their tree. But we found a couple and we reported the locations to Forest Fire Management. They're quite close to the road. So we thought at least they'd be raking around, wetting down these areas to stop them from burning, but they haven't even done that. So we went out there to wet down a tree, to save that tree, hopefully, but also to raise awareness about this problem, because really it's not enough to save one tree. There's crucial habitat all through this area. It should not be burned, but this is what we're left with. We're left with volunteer community members going out and trying to stop state-sanctioned destruction of habitat. It's truly mad.
We know that, you know, native logging, well, Kinglake Friends of the Forest and other community groups have worked so hard and campaigned, organised so hard to put an end to native logging, and yet it seems like now it's just being replaced by industrial burning. So I was wondering if you could talk more about that, some of the misinformation around planned burns and the actual impact that that has on not just the habitat of these native species, but also other ecological impacts that that has.
Yeah, sure. First, I just want to say that, yes, Vic Forest has ended, but logging is still happening in Victoria. Mm-hmm. So it's happening on private land, and some community groups are really raising the alarm about that. And it's also happening via Forest Fire Management. So they're logging these massive tracks through the forest that they're calling strategic fuel breaks. The science says they don't work, but they're a great opportunity for a log grab. They're doing other disaster logging, like quote-unquote storm recovery logging. Mm. So there is a lot of logging still happening in the state, but we have definitely had a massive win in stopping Vic Forest, so that's got to be acknowledged. But, yeah, so plan burning, it has been going on for decades, and that actually is really important to note. It's not new since Dick Forests ended. However, there are a lot of contractors that have moved from Vic Forest to Forest Fire Management. But the fact that it's been going on for decades speaks a really important truth, which is that it's not working, because we've had these plan burns going on from like the 60s, 70s, and we still had 2009 bushfires. Then after the 2009 bushfires, they ramped up the burning regime, saying we need more burning, that's how we're going to stop the big fires. And what did we have next? We have the 2019-2020 bushfires. And then this year we had the bushfires in the Grampians, absolutely devastating, and there are just constantly plan burns happening in the Grampians. So we can see from our practical experience that the burning is failing to stop the megafires that they're meant to stop. Mm. And then on the ground, it's we've seen firsthand what happens to hollow-bearing trees, which are a critical resource for so many animals in our forest. It takes a eucalyptus tree over 100 years to form a large hollow that's suitable for, say, a greater glider or a forest owl. And a Victorian government study in 2016 showed that 25% of hollow-bearing trees that are reached by fire in a planned burn collapse. So this is across thousands of hectares every year. We've got 25% of the trees reached by fire collapsing. That's possibly bigger impact than the logging. And these are the most important trees in the forest. So that's one thing that's happening. Another thing that the burning is doing to sort of the ecological integrity of forests is it's just too frequent for the plants to be able to set seed and replace themselves. So it's changing the actual structure of the forest, and it's changing the species composition. We're losing a lot of the fire-sensitive species that can only cope with fire once a century because they're burning every 15 years. Also, the critically endangered barred galaxia that we mentioned in this area, you'd think, oh, a fish is going to be okay because it's in a creek, but the chemistry, the water chemistry, is really impacted by smoke inputs, by ash, and by fire retardants. And that's why this fish is now in this position, because it was really smashed by the 2009 bushfires to such an extent that the government launched a translocation program and breeding program, and now they're burning an area where we know those fish live. Mm-hmm. So it's just, yeah, it's madness.
Yeah. Do you think that the public's perception of planned burns has, well, obviously it needs to change. I feel like when people hear of planned burns, they don't necessarily think of it in a negative light and often don't see it as something that is supposed to trigger more bushfires and create more damage. So what needs to happen there in terms of educating the public?
Yeah, great question. We've certainly, growing up in Australia, we take on a lot of myths about fire in the landscape. Certainly I've had to overcome a lot of those over the last few years, and I think the answer is engaging with the issue and reading about it, because now there's a lot of science coming out that is actually explaining the mechanisms of why these burns don't work, why they're actually in some cases making forests more flammable. Interestingly, we're finding that a lot of the people who live in the forest, who live out in the bush, hate the burns because they're living with the reality of the smoke, which is horrible for your health. You can't go outside often on the days that they burn. They're dealing with seeing the forest hollowed out of all the animals that they love, the plants that they love, and they've seen the megafires continue. So I think the more that we can all provide spaces to talk about this, the better, because we've just got to talk through the myths. We've got to bring the conversation always back to what peer-reviewed science is able to tell us about how our forests respond to fire.
Yeah, thanks for that, Awa. And so lastly, you were speaking
earlier about the plan burn that's scheduled to happen really any day now. There's a petition online that's been running, and at this moment I think I've just had a look. It's just shy of 7,500 signatures.
Oh, that's actually a different petition.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Well, do you want to tell us more about the petition that, King Lake Friends of the Forest has put up, and yeah, other things that listeners can do to, I guess, spread the word and help fight for the native forests in Victoria?
Yeah, so we do have two petitions running, actually. So that one that you mentioned is great. That's about stopping broad-scale burning in general. And then we have another petition that's specifically about this site in Tulangi, the 632 hectares that they want to burn any day, that's full of more threatened species than we've seen in most forests over recent years. So that one is called, I think it's like Stop Imminent Burn.
Yes, I've got it here now. Yeah, it's called Save Threatened Species from Imminent Planned Burn in Tulangi, and it's got around 1,300 signatures, yeah, currently.
Yeah, that's the one. So that's been running for 9 days now, and we've sent it to decision makers because sometimes there's a bit of a problem that people feel a bit defeated about this issue and they're not writing in. So it's just little annoying community groups like us who are constantly at them saying, no, no, this is not scientific, you can't do this. So the more people that can add their voice to objecting to these burns, the better. Another thing you could do is definitely follow us on socials, or if you don't use those, jump on our mailing list. You can sign up on our website, because we do run spotlighting nights and other events where you get to see the forest and directly experience the difference between areas that have been plan burned and those that have been left alone.
You're listening to 3CR, and that was Awa, who joined us on the show back in May. To keep up to date with news and campaigns organised by King Lake Friends of the Forest, and to sign the petition to stop the planned burn in Tulangi, you can follow them on Instagram at King Lake Friends of the Forest, or head to their website, kinglakefriendsoftheforest.com. This next song was written by singer-songwriter Kate Greeley, and it's called Gulunguk. Gulunguk was the site of Australia's longest-running forest blockade from 1997 to 2002, situated deep in the heart of the forests of East Gippsland.
Had I experienced the beauty of affinity, where the mother soul that was amongst giants standing still, standing tall. Swaying with the turbulence that came along their path, I wave goodbye to the future, goodbye to the past. Sway, sway.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Goolongook by Kate Greeley. This year, as well as covering stories about native forests in Victoria, we also spoke to activists on the ground in New South Wales about their efforts in defending forests there. On the 3rd of June, we were joined by Juliet Lamont, a frontline activist for climate, forests, and Palestine. Juliet's work is grounded in intersectionality and aims to always be First Nations-led when working on stolen land. She is also an award-winning filmmaker. Juliet was one of two women arrested on the roof of the Forestry Corporation building in Coffs Harbour on April 22nd as part of a group of women who occupied the roof of Forestry Corporation New South Wales. Here's our conversation. Here on Tuesday Breakfast, we've been covering a lot about the native forests in not just in Victoria, but in New South Wales. And so, you know, here in Victoria, it was first Vic Forests and now Forest Fire Management Victoria that a lot of the community groups are fighting against to try and save threatened species and the native forests. So I was wondering, you know, as a bit of a contrast or to give our listeners a bit more context, can you talk about what's currently happening in New South Wales?
Yeah, well, in New South Wales, most of the actual native forest coupes are run by the Forestry Corporation, which is a New South Wales run government body. And, I mean, they're just a rogue criminal organisation, put really plainly and really clearly. They've been taken through the court system. They've had over sort of 14 breaches in the last 2 years. They've millions of dollars worth of fines for threatening native habitat, and they're just not accountable. They're taxpayer-funded, they run at a loss, they keep getting subsidised, and they continue, you know, every day that they're in there to destroy native species, like the greater glider particularly, destroying their habitat and giving them no place to live. So, yeah, we're just, as a community, trying to put more pressure on the government however we can to shut down the Forestry Corporation and do it immediately.
Yeah, and so when you do have this massive corporation that is taxpayer-funded and there's no accountability in terms of their actions or no consequences really, it seems like, you know, there's not much that you can do, but I do want to talk about the action that you and other women took at the end of April. Can you tell us more about, the occupation of the roof of Forestry Corporation New South Wales and your demands during that action?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose this was off the back of a really big campaign, which is quite close to Coffs Harbour, where the Forestry Corporation was, called Save Bulk Forest. And we've had, you know, 23 people locking on to harvest machinery and going through, you know, the court process. And really it was falling on deaf ears. So it might feel good as an activist to stop logging for 5 hours, but the arrest process and, you know, the amount of time that you're clogged up in the court system gets really frustrating. So we just felt like, why not take it right to them? So it was actually six women. We travelled to Coffs Harbour and we got a really, really, really big ladder. And so we sort of thought that maybe we would do it in the dead of night, but potentially that would mean that we would get found really quickly and then the occupation would be over too soon before the media got a handle on it. So we just brazenly did it at 9:30. We walked down the main street of Coffs Harbour and had a few people blocking, and we put a 6.7 metre ladder up onto an awning and then up onto another part of it. It was like three levels to this huge government building. And the six of us managed to unfurl our really cool banners that we'd spent, you know, hours making, and people helping sewing. So end native forest logging now. One was a bit more edgy. It said koala killers. And, the six of us got rid of the ladder. Friends managed to whisk that away, and we stayed up there for about 6 hours with lots and lots of coppers down the bottom and lots of beeps from the community in support. And, I mean, it was a gestural action, but it got a lot of media because, I mean, it looks quite dramatic when you've got that many people on the top of a big building. So, yeah, it ended up being a successful action, I think, in that it got the message out, you know. nationally. So that was good.
Yeah, definitely. And so our previous guest that we had on the show, you know, was talking about the Australian government's complicity in weapons manufacturing and the genocide that's happening in Palestine. And I know that, you know, your work and your organising and activism is grounded in, you know, the climate, forest, Palestine, yeah. First Nations issues as well. So how do you make the connections between, you know, what's happening to the native forests in New South Wales, to, you know, broader climate crises, and also the violence that's happening in Palestine?
Well, I suppose if you look at the history of all white settler colonial projects, part of that is not only stealing the land, it's pillaging the land and using the land to extract resources to make money. So there's absolutely no respect, not only for the First Nations people who you've colonised, massacred, and especially in Australia, an ongoing genocide is part of, is the idea that then you also own the resources and that you have the right to destroy the environment and the species of that land. So I suppose we're just seeing it happening all over the world. And once, until we make a connection that we're visitors as well, particularly for me, I was a 10-pound POM, that I have a moral responsibility to kind of right some of the wrongs of my ancestors who came over here to exploit this country. And also our debt is absolutely owed to the First Nations people of this land. So I make sure that every action that I do is in consultation with them, like a lot of the Palestine stuff that I'm doing. All of those actions really need to be Palestinian-led, and as white allies rather than saviours, we need to be in allyship and really, you know, and really look to their lead before we do anything. So I just think that, yeah, I think, I mean, all the struggles are connected, and we're starting as a movement to see that intersectionality a lot more clearly. So it's not, you know, and the climate movement, I believe, have been really silent on Palestine for too long now. So I'm really glad that we're starting to make the connections and work with more solidarity.
Yeah, definitely. And so my final question for you today, Juliet, is about your other work as, you know, as a filmmaker. So what do you see, or how do you look at the relationship between art, creating films, and activism?
I think it's just it's a different avenue. It accesses different parts of our brains. It's sort of like, I think I read something recently that when you're telling a story, if the audience is engaged, your heartbeat starts to sync up. So there's some kind of really interesting emotional unity and connection in storytelling, and there's empathy created within that. And so I feel like as a call to action, storytelling, particularly filmmaking, can really sort of galvanise and encourage people to take up the fight and join in whatever cause it is that you want. You know, there's a lot of impact in creative storytelling, so I think that's, you know, it can be used alongside more didactic kind of campaigning of, you know, let's save the forest, let's protect the oceans. I think if you can really share each other's stories and have empathy with each other, then you can build a stronger movement.
That was Juliet Lamont, whom we spoke to back in June, about her involvement in occupying the roof of Forestry Corporation New South Wales in an effort to raise awareness about the destruction to forests happening across the state. You're listening to 3CR.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Welcome back to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast. We're going to play you another song now. This is by Ripple Effect Band, which is an all-female group hailing from Manangreta in Arnhem Land, Northern Territory. This is their song called Loving and Caring.
on me.
Angry at me, show me how you feel, tell me what you mean.
Kan marni me ba nga benga. Nyale mangare igar me gure gugange. Mare mungo igar me.
Welcome back to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. Earlier on in the show, we heard from Lisa Barand from Gippsland Forest Guardians, who first came to speak to us in the studios back in April. Lisa joined us again on the 14th of October to give us an exciting development regarding Fellers Coop and the future of the Strzelecki forests.
So as you know, we've been working for almost 2 years now to protect the rare and threatened species on this particular logging coop. And a couple of weeks ago, HVP, the logging company, has made an announcement in writing that instead of managing that site for plantation, they are instead going to regenerate the site to native forest for the long term. And this is just such an amazing outcome. We're just pinching ourselves every day that it's happened, and we're so delighted.
Yeah, that's incredible news. And I think when we're living at a time when good news seems quite rare, it really is such an incredible decision and a testament to your hard work at GFG, but also the wider community and other groups that are advocating for native forests. So can you tell us more about this decision? Did it come out of nowhere? Were you expecting HVP to make a statement? Just tell us more about it.
Sure. So no, they let us know before they made that statement, which is very good of them. Did we expect it? I feel like the pressure from the campaign had put some pretty uncomfortable scrutiny on HVP from multiple directions. So obviously this was our hope, that the sustainability of that site would be seen by everyone as the right way forward. But when it actually came, it was a surprise. So an amazing outcome. So much community contribution to that, you know, what we've actually been able to achieve. It's funny you say, like, the work of GFG, that there's really only three or four or five of us, you know, so it's not us, it's actually the community. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So the other day I ran into a young person. When you say about sharing young, you know, really good news, to me, more than ever, it's just in my heart that young people need to hear these stories. So I ran into this student that I know from a school, Woodley School. They're actually really interested in what we do, and they've had groups down there. So this student was aware of what was going on, and he knew about the outcome, but I just bumped into him in the shops down the street. And when he saw me, he was so stoked. I just can't tell you how happy he was. And he said something to me like, you know, oh, all the great work that you've done at GFG. And I looked at him and I thought, no, this is actually your work, because it's him and his, you know, fellow students who have been writing to the minister about the lack of GFG protections. I've read their submissions. You know, I know they've done it. They wrote submissions to the FSC. That was not an easy process. And thank you to all your listeners, by the way, who were part of that. So actually it's their win, and what a thing for them to be able to see that it's actually worth fighting and advocating for the important things. That's really where I'm at personally with it.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful story, and it just goes to show that I think, you know, young people are really passionate. I think there's often these narratives of young people being apathetic or, but they're not. They do really care. And sometimes, you know, they just need a bit of guidance on what to do or how to go about it, which is why I guess groups like Gippsland Forest Guardians, but other collectives can help guide community members to show them how to go about things. And of course, there's strength in numbers. So, that's incredible news. Is there a timeline for this? Is it an immediate halting of operations? Do you know much about the logistics regarding the withdrawal?
So it's early days, and we've got some meetings lined up with HVP and also with the council to talk about what you call regeneration is going to look like. So there's about 50 hectares, which is, you know, let's say 50 MCGs that was logged last year. And our understanding is that those areas are going to be regenerated. So that means, you know, replanted with the right species that are ecologically appropriate, which is basically tall, wet eucalypt forest, mountain ash, beautiful. I will say, I don't know if your listeners saw a little post we did on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, but nature is doing an amazing job already. We've been looking, and, you know, the seed bank is already popping up all the species you would expect to see there. So that's great, but it's still going to need some care. So that needs to be regenerated. The other area is about 19 hectares, which we had been claiming is native forest. It hadn't been logged, but on HVP's maps, it's shown as plantation. That now will not be logged either. So that's what we know. And I guess from our supporters' perspective, I would think that they're looking to us to make sure that those things happen in the right way and are locked in for the long term. You know, we have a good sense that HVP is absolutely committed to this and for the right reasons, no problem. But things change in the future, so we really want to make sure that it's done properly and that the land is protected in perpetuity.
Yeah, definitely. And will there be any groups that get to oversee the regeneration to ensure that this is being done the right way?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and that they're the things that we'll definitely be talking to HVP and also the council about. It's not our job to be a regulator. You know, we don't want to be doing that, but it's important that it's done right. And so, you know, to the extent that we see that in the past things haven't been done right and the oversight from, you know, regulators and others hasn't been great, we really want to make sure that it is good from now on. So we'll be involved in that to the extent that people want us to be involved and try and make sure that it's done in a really sustainable way.
Yeah. And then in terms of the future for the Strzelecki Forest, for the Slender Tree Ferns, but also for yourself as a collective, is there anything that you are currently working on or that you're keeping your eye out on for the future?
So this decision that's been made is a good decision. You know, it's a good decision for nature. It's a good decision for the community. It's also a good decision in terms of building HVP's reputation as a sustainable organisation. So we haven't spoken to them, as I said. We're going to have a sit down in a couple of weeks. But I would hope personally that having made this decision on this kind of piece of land with these ecological contexts around it, that it would be a template for other sites, really. And that's consistent with the FSC. And we know there are a lot of similar sites. It's not our favourite day when we make complaints, but we're already talking to all the right stakeholders about other sites that are exactly the same in their ecological context. So, you know, it's a good approach, and I would really hope that that's what's taken forward. So that will be a big priority for us, absolutely. The other is sharing some knowledge, really, like you said, you know, helping the community understand how to kind of take the approach that we've taken, perhaps. Since all this has happened, we get calls every week from people who are very distressed by what's happening in their own area and asking for advice. Like, we're not experts, but we have one story to tell about the, you know, our learnings, and we're going to be finding ways to share those learnings. So that's another focus.
Amazing. And I feel like this is a story that's just continuing to evolve with new updates. And like you said, hopefully we can see similar outcomes for other sites across Victoria, where there are so many local community groups who are trying to save their patch of native forest. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this morning, Lisa. So thank you so much again for coming in. But before we leave today, I know you have shared some audio with me that I'm going to play for our listeners. So I was wondering if you could give a short introduction to what I'm about to play.
Absolutely. Before I do, thank you, Fong. Thanks for giving us a voice, and thank you to all your listeners for all their ongoing support. So, yeah, people enjoyed, I think, the lyrebirds last time. So this is a dawn recording, over 8 or 9 species, not 8 or 9 birds, but different species on this recording, including gangangs, which are EPBC listed. And so enjoy.
That was Lisa Barrand from Gippsland Forest Guardians, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast Summer Programming. For our final segment today, we revisit a conversation that we had with Nicola Silbert, Senior Lawyer at Environmental Justice Australia, specialising in threatened species and nature protection. On December 2nd, Nicola joined us on the show to discuss the news that the Labor government had struck a deal with the Greens to pass changes made to the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act of 1999. She spoke to us about these reforms and what impacts they will have on the protection of the environment. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Now, I understand that these reforms to the national environmental laws have been a long time coming. I was wondering if you could start by giving us some historical context regarding the lead up to these long-awaited changes, as well as some of the key criticisms of the existing laws.
Absolutely. So Australia's national environmental laws were made in the Howard era, and they're more than 25 years old. So it's no surprise that these laws have been broken and that they're facilitating destruction of nature and climate. This was confirmed by an independent review of the laws in 2020 by Professor Graham Samuels. Following the review, the then newly elected Labor government under Minister Tanya Plibersek committed to making new laws. And this kicked off a process of law reform which stalled in 2024 but was restarted earlier this year by the new Environment Minister, Murray Watt. The new laws have been made very quickly over the last few months and have just passed the federal parliament on last Thursday. So this is by far the biggest change we've seen to national environmental laws since the Act came into force. There are over 1,500 pages of amendments in total.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Nicola. It seems that even though this has been a long time coming, it does seems to have been like a whirlwind of action in the last week. So just going back to the laws, I think you were about to explain what were some of the major criticisms.
There's a bit of an echo. Is it possible? I'm not sure how to. This might be better.
Oh, that sounds, that sounds great.
Could you repeat the question?
No worries. So you were talking about, you were giving us some context in the lead up to the changes made to the laws, which you said passed on Thursday. You were sort of saying that the existing laws weren't really fit for purpose in terms of protecting the environment. Were there any specific details that you could give us regarding those existing laws, things that, you know, environmental groups or people like yourselves were really concerned about?
Yes, absolutely. So the old Act, I think it would be unsurprising to everyone listening that it was completely failing to stop nature and climate destruction. We had approval of fossil fuel projects under the old Act, and particularly destruction of threatened species and threatened species habitat due to land clearing and logging loopholes. And overall, it was recognised that we're in an extinction crisis and a climate crisis, and that the Act was broken and not addressing those issues.
Yeah, and I know that on this show we've covered a lot of stories regarding native logging, particularly in Victoria, but also in New South Wales. But let's look at some of the positive or encouraging outcomes from this reform. What can you tell us about, some of the good things that have come out of these changes?
Yeah, so I guess overall the reforms aren't what we'd hoped to see altogether, but there are some really encouraging aspects. In particular, there's going to be the creation of a new watchdog for the environment, which is a new environment protection agency, and that's really exciting for compliance and enforcement of the Act. There are a lot of enforcement issues when it comes to the national environmental laws, that they're often broken. There's also going to be a new framework for national environmental standards. So this gives the minister the power to make regulations which will lift nature protection. And there are a few new concepts introduced into the Act, such as unacceptable impacts, which could also improve nature protection if they're implemented properly. One of the major gains made by the Greens during negotiations was also additional protections for deforestation, particularly the removal of the exemption for logging under the Act.
And so you said just now that, you know, the reforms made aren't exactly what you expected. So I guess there are still some concerns moving forward. And one of the key concerns, for example, voiced by the Biodiversity Council was regarding a new so-called Restoration Contributions Fund. I was wondering if you could explain what that is to us.
Yes, so we and others are extremely concerned about this new offset mechanism. So under the current Act, there's an offsets policy and there are offsets for approvals, but there isn't a full mechanism which allows for offsets by paying money. So the laws create this kind of new system where as part of an approval of a project which destroys species or habitat, the developer could be required to secure compensation, and that compensation could include paying money into an offset fund rather than actually restoring or protecting habitat. And I suppose in other jurisdictions, in particular in New South Wales as an example, these sort of pay-to-destroy systems have been found to be extremely risky. And in New South Wales, they're overhauling that system. And so we are very concerned about the on-the-ground impacts that this offset fund could have.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Is there any research into how these funds are used or whether there is any positive impact on habitats and species from the resources or money acquired through these sort of payment schemes or not really?
I suppose that in theory it's possible that offset funds could work, but they need to be very carefully designed to make sure that there is equivalent habitat available to secure a like-for-like offset. And this was the problem in New South Wales, that money was kind of being paid into a fund where that offset never existed, and so the money couldn't be spent. And so the way that it's been designed under the new laws doesn't contain those safeguards, which would make sure that overall that there is a net gain.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's why a lot of environmental groups, you know, rename that contributions fund as the pay to destroy scheme. Aside from that, though, what are some other notable concerns moving forward?
So aside for the offset scheme, one of the core issues with the laws is the kind of broad power which is given to the minister. And this is a problem that's been previously identified with the Act, that the minister has a lot of discretion and a lot of power to approve destruction. And the reforms in some ways expand this power. And so we're pretty concerned about that. We also have concerns about the fast-tracking of assessment and approvals under the new laws, and the handing over of powers to the states on nationally significant decisions. We also think that the laws don't go far enough when it comes to climate change. They require some kind of new limited disclosure obligations, but climate change is still not something that would be core to the considerations in approving a fossil fuel project.
Yeah, which is really concerning when we're seeing the immediate impacts of the continuing climate crisis, not just in this country but around the world. I think every day we're seeing new images of things like flooding and other climate change-induced natural disasters. You were talking about the expanded powers of the Environment Minister. How would that
How do those powers come into play with, you know, this new National Environment Protection Agency that you were telling us just before?
Yeah, so the National Environment Protection Agency will be a watchdog. Originally, there was a proposal that that agency should be an independent body to try and this was proposed by the review of the Act, so that someone separate from the minister would be responsible for assessment and approval decisions. That's not going to be the role of the new EPA. It's not going to be entirely independent of the minister. It's more acting as on the direction of the minister and to ensure compliance with the Act. So although we're excited to see that there would be an EPA, we're disappointed that it's not an independent decision maker, as was previously recommended by this kind of independent review. Mm.
Thanks for that, Nicola. And can you tell us what happens next now with these laws, and what are you going to be keeping your eye on?
Absolutely. So the Act makes some powers for the minister to make new national standards for the environment. And these standards are going to be really important in making sure that there are on-the-ground benefits from the laws. So that those we have two draft standards which are currently open for consultation until early next year. And there'll be other standards coming through. So we'll be engaging on those to make sure that that as they're finalised, that they ensure better environment protection. And altogether, we'll kind of be keeping an eye on how the government implements these laws to make sure that that they hold firm to protect nature.
That was Nicola Silbert, Senior Lawyer at Environmental Justice Australia, about the long-awaited changes made to the EPBC Act. You can follow Environmental Justice Australia by going to the website envirojustice.org.au or search them up on Instagram.
Subtropical rainforests that don't usually burn, we're actually on fire.
We have the obligation to care for country.
So much forest burnt that around 3 billion animals are either killed or displaced.
The more we push back against the colonial apparatus, the more positive change we can have in terms of addressing climate change.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
Here to stay.
That's all we have on today's program. Thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of Tuesday Breakfast. As part of summer programming, we're sharing with you some of our favourite conversations from throughout the year. Stay tuned, because up next is Accent of Women.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.